The San Jose Sharks Audio Network is on 24 hours a day. Whether you're in the office or on the go, make sure that you download the Sharks SAP Center app and hit listen anytime. You can also find us on your computer by going to sjsharks.com/listen. If it's a game broadcast, breaking news, or a player feature, the place to find it is right here on the San Jose Sharks Audio Network.
You're listening to the Sharks Audio Network. Now, here's your host, Ted Ramey.
All right, we are now joined on the Sharks Audio Network by Francis Daniels, the man behind Big Head Hockey. What's going on, man? How are you doing?
Hey, I'm doing great right now. You know, summer's wrapping up, but that just means the season's starting, so pretty excited for that. A lot of fun storylines kind of digging into right now, so having a lot of fun.
Yeah, I guess before we go Sharks specific, because as I was telling you before we started recording, you know, when your "they never should have let this happen" video about the Sharks came out, I was just, everybody was texting that to me, which was awesome. But let me ask you, since you bring up storylines, like where are you most pulled to as we go into the start of the season? Is the potential for a three-peat with Florida? Are you thinking about what, you know, Edmund can do to recover, or do you, you know, does your mind take you elsewhere? Like, what are you most focused on?
Man, you know what? That's a great question, because I'm pretty interested in a lot of the younger guys around the league. Like, I made a video on Bedard the other day, you know, the video you talked about a second ago on the Sharks young guys, but there really are a new generation of players kind of coming in right now. And then, I mean, the older guys kind of are on, you know, get off the pot soon territory with, you know, McDavid has a couple more years of being the best, and, you know, McKinnon has a couple more years being the best. So I'm kind of interested to see how this next group kind of starts to take over and kind of becomes the face of the league.
Yeah, it will be interesting just because they come up so young. I mean, when McDavid came in, he was obviously a generational talent, and he was very, very young and really young captaincy, but that kind of set the stage for what we're seeing now with all these young guys really coming in and making an impact. Has it surprised you the way that the youth movement has happened across the NHL?
Man, a little bit for sure, because, you know, we saw Lafreniere, who was like, he was so good and everyone thought he was going to be, I don't know, at least the next great prospect. And he kind of slowed down. Kako had a similar thing. Jack Hughes, you know, his first year in the league was not that great. So it kind of looked like the younger guys weren't able to keep up. Maybe it was just the game's a little bit too fast for the younger guys. But then, I mean, Bedard wins the Calder as an 18-year-old. Celebrini one-ups him the next year. It is a little surprising, actually. They kind of come out of nowhere, and it's just like, yeah, if you're good enough, you can be good enough.
Yeah, it's interesting because for so long, everybody said that the NHL is not a developmental league, which meant if a guy was going to come in at such a, you know, young age, they had to be at a really, really high level. But I also wonder about how much of an impact, and I'd like to get your thoughts on this, social media has had, because we go back a while ago, and if somebody pulled a Michigan, that was, you know, highlight stuff. It was going to be on SportsCenter's top 10, whatever. But now I got to think that with like TikTok and Instagram and Twitter, there are kids that are 12, 13 years old seeing that, probably younger, that would have never had the opportunities to see some of these high level skills unless it was like directly in their circle, and they see the trick plays and the, you know, all the stuff that people are doing on social, and they're like, okay, I'm going to try that now. And that just seems, in terms from a skill standpoint, I think that's why we've seen things happen so rapidly. And I don't think it gets talked enough, but I also can't deny that if stuff like that had been around when I was a kid, like, yeah, if we had seen some guy do something like the Michigan, you know, like whatever sport it was, we would have all been out there trying it. But that didn't used to happen. People didn't used to have that type of ability to see it as frequently or as often or even on demand.
Yeah. It is crazy nowadays. And I mean, you look at Trevor Zegras and he comes into the league and immediately he's the best stick handling player. I think it is that Patrick Kane generation, like a whole group of players grew up watching Patrick Kane and they got to see how stick handling can kind of be your number one trait. And if you're good enough at it, you can just be a good hockey player. So I think it has had a big effect.
It's been pretty wild, man. Just, and it's fun also because I think that, you know, the marketing that the NHL has done has not always been exactly what everyone hoped it would be, because they wanted to kind of showcase more and more of these personalities. And I think they finally gotten the right message out with the next golden generation being here. And I think that's, it's aggressive, but it's good. I mean, you're putting a lot of pressure on all these young stars in the midst of some other established generational talents that you mentioned were at the end. But, you know, I think, you want to get to where the NFL is, to where even the guys that are wearing the helmets most of the time, people can look at them and know exactly what superstar they're talking about.
Yeah, exactly. I'm in all the videos I do, I try to put a little icon on top of them, but the dream is that one day you won't have to because people will be able to recognize them.
No, it's true, man, and it feels like it's trending that way. So, all right, I've gotten away from it for long enough, but I want to get into your video about the Sharks and their prospect pool and just the way that, the Sharks are seemingly situated. Not that I want to speak for you, but if you could kind of give like a, I don't know, a brief synopsis of what you were trying to say in that video when talking about Celebrini and Smith and Michael Mesa and Sam Dickinson and so forth, a lot of these guys, just because I don't think it'd be fair to me to try and explain your video. And I hope this will, if people haven't seen it, they need to go watch it.
I mean, basically, just the Sharks are really, really good in the next couple of years. Like, not, couldn't be simpler than that. Like, Celebrini is like so good. And, I've got some stats here, but he really is among that superstar category already at 18. Mind you, June birthday. So he's 18 all year long. And then, the whole crop around him has been unbelievable as well. Like, really, you couldn't ask for a better supporting cast. Except for maybe a couple more defensemen here or there, but maybe next year, Keaton Verhoff, he looks pretty good, Ryan Lynn. So there's another year of tanking, and then I think it's just shoot for the moon, shoot for the cup.
The stats that you referenced on Celebrini, I know that in your video you started out with, I believe, chances created, and you also talked about, his ability to win puck battles. If you could get into those a little bit.
Yeah, actually, so I got some here. I used Instat for these stats, and these are per game stats across the whole season. But he is one of the better puck battling players. But what actually is really impressive is his transition game and playmaking game. He was sixth in the NHL in slot passes per game this year, just ahead of Mitch Marner, who signed for 12 million in Vegas, and just behind Jack Hughes, superstar New Jersey Devil. But then the transition game, so zone entries and stick handling zone entries, which are, self-created a lot of the time. He was just ahead of Kaprizov and Point, and then again behind Jack Hughes. So really you can say if you trust his stats more than anything else, which maybe you want to watch him a little bit, and he looks great when you watch him, but top 10 transition player, top 10 playmaker at 18 years old, that's what Connor McDavid was doing.
Yeah,
So
exactly. I mean, that's the thing. Like when you see those reference points to say, like, yes, this is something we saw from Connor McDavid, at the same point, it doesn't seem fair. Not that it's not a valid comparison, but people are now putting Macklin Celebrini in that air of like, well, we're expecting you to be the next, big thing, very much in the same thing that we did with Connor Bedard, who we'll talk about in a second here. But why do you think people maybe slept on Celebrini? Like the thought, and I've had people almost gaslight me about this when I've asked them, and they've said, oh yeah, I never said that, Celebrini wasn't going to be like Bedard. And I'm like, I kind of feel like that's what everyone said, that Bedard was the generational talent. Celebrini was going to be a star, but not to that same level. Is there
100%.
anything, what?
100%.
Oh
Yeah,
yeah.
yeah, yeah. Yeah,
No, I
if you
mean,
go back and read it, like everyone said that Celebrini was a tier below, and Bedard was generational talent by all accounts. You can read inner circle scout notes on him that say, yeah, like I would trade the last 10 first overall picks for this guy. Celebrini was great and he was a consensus number one. You wouldn't take anyone else number one, but he was seen as an Adam Fantilli. Fantilli's great, but he's not Celebrini. Celebrini took that jump this year in the NHL and he was more ready than anyone really thought. It's
It's
crazy.
been, yeah, it has been crazy. And I think that one of the things that you pointed out that was something that we actually talked to Ryan Warsowski at the end of the season was the fact that Celebrini is willing to throw pucks into the slot from wherever he might be on the ice to try and make something happen. And people have said, okay, he can give up the puck a little bit too easily at times, and that maybe, what separates superstars is that they do take risks, but they also know when to pick their spots. If a guy is consistently putting the puck into a dangerous place, I mean, is a coach going to ever tell him to stop, in your opinion, or should he ever stop if it's leading to chances created and goal scoring opportunities?
You know what? There's a time and place, right? So I think there's a story from, I can't remember who it was, but it was about Sidney Crosby in the 2017 finals against Nashville. And I think it was the game they won the cup, so it was game six, I think. And Crosby was playing this reserved game, and he wasn't chucking the puck into the slot a lot. He was really trying to hold on to possession, and he played it perfectly until the right moment. And you watch that and you think, man, that is perfect hockey. But then you watch Connor McDavid in the Cup Finals the last 2 years, and he'll break into the zone and chuck it into the slot, and there's chaos, and then maybe it goes back the other way once in a while, but a lot of the time it ends up going into the net. So there's a couple different ways to play the game, and it really does kind of come down to the coach and how he wants the system to run. But if you can create these great chances and you're already this good at getting it into the slot for a chance, I don't see any coach telling him to stop anytime soon.
No, and I think that, while I'm sure he's got some plays that he wants to take back from a season ago where he lost the puck, there were a couple times in overtime where he tried to split two defenders, ended up giving up the puck, and it would go back the other way, either for a chance created that was pretty dangerous. And I think even one time it went back the other way for the game-winning goal for the opposition. But we're also talking about an 18-year-old. Like, if you're on a team that's got the worst record in the NHL, that's the time. I mean, last year and, probably this year, while I don't expect the Sharks to be a darling of the NHL, anything could happen. Obviously, I might be a little bit biased in working for the team, but if there's a time for him to learn, it's right now. Take these chances now while they're not vying for home ice advantage or something like that.
Yeah, and learn from it too, like you're going to make these chances and you're going to kind of read what is a strong NHL defenseman going to be able to shut down, what can I kind of get away with, and you build on it. So next year maybe he does it a little bit less, or maybe he does it in a different way, tries going through the legs when he used to go for a push shot instead. So he'll try different things and he'll try to learn from it. The fact he's been able to adapt so quickly, I'm just not worried. I wouldn't ever be worried about this guy.
I know that, you said statistically the reference point for some of the things he was doing was a Connor McDavid. I mean, when you look at his rookie year, how much can we truly know about what kind of player he is going to be, other than, and if he keeps that up, he should be a star at the very least? Because I want to talk about, Bedard a little bit too here, because it's so early. We know so little, especially with the lack of surrounding talent on all these, young teams, whether they're talking about Chicago or San Jose. It's never just one player. Now, the one player can be the guy that takes it to the next level, but there's so many factors that go into being that superstar in the NHL, and obviously the team having success long term.
Yeah, and like when you're a rookie, there are some things that coaches can't really game plan against you. They don't really know how you play. So you see the sophomore slump, is what they call it. In your second year, you're a little bit slower. Your numbers aren't as good. But I feel like you can get a pretty decent read on a player at this point, especially when they are young enough. If they're Andrei Kuzmenko coming in and scoring 40 goals, but the underlying metrics say that maybe he was getting a lot of high danger passes and shooting 30% isn't sustainable, you can kind of make a read that he's not going to keep that up. But nothing really points to Celebrini being that kind of player. Bedard, there's a couple questions, if I'm being honest, and I'm a huge Bedard fan. I think before the season started, I would have picked Bedard 10 times out of 10 over Celebrini, and now I'm picking Celebrini over Bedard. So I guess you can kind of extrapolate some things. And you can kind of see what they need to work on. And it just seems like a lot more work is needed for Bedard to become that number one guy, whereas Celebrini, it's more about refining some aspects.
The one thing I think about with Bedard, and it was talked about out here in San Jose, because everybody noticed how much fun Macklin Celebrini and Will Smith were having out there on the ice. And eventually, we saw Yaroslav Askarov come up. He was a really fun personality. Colin Graf was having fun as well. And now, adding Michael Mesa to the mix, and maybe some, more young talents like a Quentin Musty, Sam Dickinson, et cetera. That was not the same vibe at all that we got from Chicago. And it was just, and I know Chicago is a very, very different market than San Jose, but I often wondered how much the pressure was also maybe not getting to Bedard, but maybe how much more aware of it he was, because that's what Macklin Celebrini is about to experience this year, the threat of the sophomore slump, and also being on a team that, again, while we don't know what's going to happen, people are not exactly projecting the Sharks or the Blackhawks to have, banner years.
Yeah, and you kind of look at the situations they were dropped into, and you really do have to respect the fact that Bedard didn't have the much as much help as Celebrini had. And when you go into a year with someone who's your age, your roommate, and you can be friends with them all season, it seems to me like, and obviously I haven't met the two and I don't know them that much, but if you score a highlight reel goal and you have a sleepover with Toffoli next weekend, you have a You're a little happier than if you're Connor Bedard, who scores a nice snapshot, but is a minus two on the night and has to be the number one face to the media and doesn't seem like he has anyone he's that close to, doesn't seem like he's working with anyone that's building towards something huge. Like Frank Nazar near the end of the season started to look pretty good for Chicago. Sam Rinzel is a defenseman who looks really good, and I kind of like what they're doing with their defense, but the whole team just isn't really set up for him to succeed the way that Celebrini could kind of walk in and then work with the pieces around him.
Yeah. And I mean, that's a credit to Mike Greer and the fact that he's been able to, A, draft well with young guys and bring in some of the established veterans that have been around. I wanted to ask you just about Will Smith as well. And, him last year was kind of a slow start. And then once after about the middle of January, he had a big game in Boston. It was a 10 a.m. start out here in the Bay Area. And it was, 1 o'clock something start back in Boston. But he's got, obviously connections to the Boston area. He had a great game, two times turned defense into one goal and one assist, I believe, for him on that day. And that was kind of the launching point for him. And then from that point on, he was right there with the top producers of his draft class and just kept on roaring for the rest of the year. What do you see when you look at his game?
Yeah, so one thing I found in the video is that his shot is a little bit slower, and that's not really the end of the world. You can look at guys like Besser or Pettersson on Vancouver who have slower releases, and they can score 40 goals or just about 40 goals in a good season. But for Will Smith, I think when he first came into the league, it was a little bit, it was a bit of an adjustment period trying to find his shots and when he can take his shots. So I started to see a trend where he would almost, I'm bringing up all these Canucks right now, season ticket, whatever. Go out of the zone, back in. Ovechkin does the same thing, hide away on, empty net situation, 6-on-5, 5-on-4, and he would find as much open ice as possible to load up his shot. And once he started doing that, I think he probably did that three, four times near the end of the season. The goals were going in, and I think he got his swagger, and I guess it just came a lot easier as it went on. But I'm not entirely sold on Smith being a 110 point player in the future yet. I think there's still a lot of parts to his game that need a little bit of refinement before he's there.
No, for sure. And I think that he would acknowledge that as well. And, his defense needed some work. It got better in
Definitely.
the second half of the season, his awareness. And obviously, it was probably not fair to him. Every night that he would go out there, he was being compared to the other rookie in Macklin Celebrini. And that was, that's an unfair reference point because Will Smith still had a very, very high producing level for a rookie on a bad team. But you had what looked like the next generational talent in the NHL right next to him, which is that's again, sports aren't fair. They're cruel for a reason. Now they've got Michael Mesa after this year's draft. And I know, people are thinking, okay, they didn't get the number one pick this year. And of all the years to not get the number one pick, this is a good one as they end up with a very, very, what appears to be a very, very high level player in Mesa. Who, and I believe you mentioned this as well, a lot of people have made reference to with Macklin Celebrini in terms of his game. He's got point records that are right there with a guy named Connor McDavid, who we previously mentioned. Hard to ignore the production. Just your reactions to him joining that prospect pool for the San Jose Sharks.
Yeah, it's just gross. Like that's kind of where it pushes it over the edge, where you think that this team might be one of those Colorado in the early 2020s rosters where they can just score at will. Misa is so fast. He's a transition guy who can defend. He can also snipe. It has great hands, has a great work ethic. It just feels like he's the kind of guy that I don't know. I don't know. I maybe would have taken him first overall, and like he fell to second, and San Jose gets to pick him up. That's great. Chicago is probably a little bit pissed about that. They probably would have used Michael Mesa, but San Jose gets Mesa, and now that's either your second line center. You can put him with Celebrini. It seems like whatever weakness he'll have or whatever problem he has, which from what I saw seems like such a sporadic list of either he can't create that well at 1-on-1, but maybe he can in the right circumstance, or maybe he doesn't have the right work ethic or discipline, but then he can also defend. And it seems like everyone's kind of seeing something else. And it just felt to me like the flaws with him aren't obvious enough to say he's anything but a top end player. So just unbelievable.
No, it is, pretty exciting. And the other thing that's interesting, and I know this is one of those cute storylines that we get into when we're a little bit close to the situation, but now he's with his former teammate in Igor Chernyshov, who looks like may have been one of the steals of the previous year's draft in 2024, who looks like he can just, score goals that people aren't even talking about. I mean, that's the funny thing is that they're not talking about Chernyshov. They're not talking about Dickinson. They're not talking about Musty. There are these very, very elite names that if any other team had in their prospect pool would be getting a lot of run. But because there's big names at the top, people aren't focusing on them as much.
Yeah, exactly. Chernyshov especially is so exciting. He's got the biggest mystery box potential, I guess you could say, where he could be anything really. And he's really something that San Jose doesn't have a lot of, which is just huge size and on that winger position. But then, I mean, like you said, Dickinson, he could be so good. He could be the number one quarterback defenseman for this unit. But then you also got Luca Cagnoni, who just tore up the AHL and he was unbelievable. Pride of BC, shout out. Quinton Musty, that's another first round pick who seems to be developing great. So, I mean, yeah, like this prospect pool is so good. You almost wonder if they are making the right steps this year. Maybe they want to sell one of these pieces to see if they can get a little playoff action. Maybe they jumped the gun a little earlier than they thought. One team that was a little bit scary to think about as a comparison is Toronto, actually, where when they added all this young talent all of a sudden and they already had Nazem Kadri, who's your William Eklund, and then Matthews is your Celebrini. By year number one of them all being together is when they made the playoffs and they looked pretty damn good. So maybe you want that early experience, or maybe you don't want to end up like Toronto, but who would want to end up like Toronto? So I don't know.
It's funny though, just because I have to think about Toronto, with so many years there until recently when they, don't get past the first round. And I also think about LA and how they've just been getting knocked out by the Oilers and they've gone through multiple coaches and things. And I'm like, well, maybe the problem is going up against the greatest player in the world every year in the playoffs. That tends to not end well for, I don't know if that's on the coach. I could be wrong. And then, like I said, Toronto, again, when they lost to Montreal, that was one where I think everybody was just so stunned, but Montreal stunned everybody. But yeah, I mean, that's again, sports, it's hard to, figure out where things are going to go. And then, this year I'll probably look like, I always joke I'm in sports broadcasting because I'm good at being wrong, but I'll talk about Toronto not being able to take it all the way. And then they'll probably go to the cup final this year or something just to make me look bad. You brought up an interesting point though, about the Sharks and their rebuild. Last year at the deadline, the Sharks were greater sellers than people expected, especially when the Fabian Zetterlund trade went down, who was, in addition to being a good goal scorer, was a fan favorite. Mike Grier said that it was time to start building. They probably were not as active in free agency as they had hoped to be, but I understand a team in a rebuild is not where everybody wants to go. What do you think of the timeline for the Sharks rebuild and when you expect them to be in that window of getting in the playoffs?
You know what? I mean, I did say maybe they're shooting for it this year, but I don't know if I really even believe that because the defensive core is not strong enough yet. And I think that's something that needs a pretty big overhaul, or at least get to the point where it's decent. And right now, I would say it's last in the league. And it's all these offense first guys who are going to be pretty fun to watch. Like, it's going to be a lot of fun this year. But I mean, if you allow 3 or 4 goals a game while you're trying to get a rookie Askarov into the lineup, I don't know. Like, maybe this is a little bit of difficulty. And maybe that's where the biggest problem for this rebuild kind of starts from. But I think if they can get any kind of defenseman, and maybe they start shooting for one of those Noah Dobson type trades where they just get a guy who can be the staple shutdown minute munching guy and they can kind of build around him. Maybe that's when you start to say the rebuild is finishing. But for now, it's definitely still a work in progress. And I mean, Dickinson looks great, but to step in and be that number one guy, that's once every couple of years for a prospect. So, don't hold your hopes for that because that might not happen.
Let me ask you about your channel a little bit, specifically starting with the video first. I always look to see what the algorithm brings up, and I never had a chance to do it that time because I got texted by so many people that, I was watching it before the algo pushed it. But that one did seem to get a lot of run. Were you surprised by how much interest there was in that video?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, so I've actually done a couple of videos on the Sharks now, and I've just found them such an interesting team, so fun. They got Celebrini. It's so fun. So I think there are a lot of Sharks fans that have been tuning in. So when I put it out, I kind of thought, okay, it will resonate with the Sharks fans, and then some other people, some Habs fans might be angry because they think Lane Hutson's better than Celebrini, and who knows what's gonna happen. But yeah, I was pretty shocked. It seemed like everyone loved the video. It wasn't the video I put the most effort in, if I can be frank. Like some of these scouting videos I do, like they take a week or two to make, and that one took 3 or 4 days. So I was pretty shocked. I didn't learn the lesson to just put less effort in, but I definitely learned that if you talk to the right audience, I guess people will be pretty happy. So it's pretty cool. I mean, I love the Sharks, and their fans are so nice. So
Yeah, it is. I mean, that is a nice part about the San Jose fan base is they're very friendly, welcoming. And I know people have always talked about, the rivalry with Vegas or something. But I remember a couple of years ago, right the next year, the next fall, the fans from Vegas were trying to take pictures, and Sharks fan comes down like, "Oh, let us help you. You can stand over there." And I'm like, "Yeah." I was like, "This is a pretty good place to come and watch a game, especially if you're opposition." But I guess to that greater point about how interested everyone else in the league is with San Jose, because I feel obviously Macklin Celebrini and Will Smith, they bring a lot of eyeballs. But because the Sharks haven't been in the playoffs since 2019 when they made the Western Conference Finals, they've had a changing of the guard. None of the names from that era are there anymore. Everybody's gone. It's a whole new generation. And I feel like there may have been some Sharks fatigue at the end there, especially because they never won at all. But now it feels like with a whole new, character, faces, all new guys, that the rest of the league is kind of starting to become a little bit Sharks curious once again.
Definitely. And the way they built that last team where they drafted Marleau early, and he never became really a superstar. I not to be rude to you guys, but he
No,
was
you.
always top of the line, but he wasn't ever a top two left winger or whatever. And then they traded for Thornton, and that's kind of when the window opened. He was already 25 or 26. You guys are starting with an 18-year-old Celebrini, and you guys are starting right out of the draft with these guys, and it's clearly being built properly. So if anything, it's maybe even more exciting than before. And I'll definitely say around the league, the Sharks are the good guys. Like you look at how many years they didn't get it done in the playoffs despite having such a nice team. Everyone loved them. It just seems like so much goodwill has been bought, and then they have this really likable young group. I think everyone's kind of cheering for the Sharks a little bit, and if you're a Sharks fan, it's just a great time.
So tell me about the start of your channel and why you decided to start doing this. I mean, I know that you're obviously a very passionate fan, and that it's very clear how much interest and knowledge you have. But it appears that there is a daunting amount of work that goes into your videos. And I remember when I shared that video with some of the other broadcast crew from the Sharks, their first reaction was like, "This is really good. Like, this is well researched. Like, this is very the production values." They were all very, very impressed. And I don't, I assume you're doing it all on your own. But like I said, that feels like a daunting amount of work.
Big Head Hockey as a company, really, it's been going for a couple of years on Twitter, and then I've talked to the NHL a little bit about some of their social media, and then it's been around. There's we do articles on Substack, and I've always kind of had the dream of turning it into a YouTube channel as well. That was from the very beginning, but it was kind of about refining it. So I spent a couple of years kind of learning how to video edit first. I didn't want to put out a bad product. And then really just trying to learn the game. So I've been really, really focused on like studying as much as possible. Like the Jack Hahn type, if you know who he is. He's a former Maple Leafs assistant coach, and now he writes on Substack, and it's a great resource. He's so knowledgeable. And then I talked to Hockey Psychology. He's a great guy as well. And so we share our thoughts, watch a lot of his videos too. And I've just been trying to get as knowledgeable as possible. And I kind of feel like if you can put together a well-researched product with, good video editing, and it's got a storyline, and it's all, comprehensive, I think you can kind of get people who aren't as interested in analytics into analytics in the right way. And I think that was kind of been the purpose of Big Head Hockey, and I'm pretty happy to see it starting to work out on YouTube.
I have a buddy who did a book on analytics in soccer, and one of the things that he talked about was that people got so used to how concrete and easy to understand that analytics were in baseball that people have not been as not as welcoming, but it's been harder for them to understand it in something like hockey or soccer because it is a motion sport. Same thing with basketball. Have you found that at all to be true? Just because baseball, I feel like baseball, because it's not a motion sport, it's play, stop, play, stop, play, stop, as opposed to hockey, where it's a nonstop. It might be a little bit harder for people to get into, but once they do and understand it, it kind of opens up things for them.
100%. And there are some advanced stats that I don't tend to put as much stock into. So like, or okay, I shouldn't phrase it that way, because expected goals really are the best advanced stat in terms of understanding what's kind of happening. But on a day-to-day, game-to-game, even playoff series to playoff series kind of sample, it's not big enough to have a proper understanding of what's happening. And a lot of these advanced stats don't work unless you understand what's going on behind the, under the roof. So if a guy is matched up primarily against McDavid in a series and he has the worst expected goals on the team, I'm not going to say he was the worst defenseman on the team because the coach trusted him against McDavid. So there's still a layer of you got to research it and kind of see why these numbers are happening. But really, like, a guy plays 36 hours of ice time a season. If you wanted to have a good understanding of, the top 200 players in the league, that'd be like 10,000 hours a year. Like, you wouldn't be able to watch everyone and have detailed notes on everyone. You need these, really, it's a tool to kind of help you understand from a surface level, and then you can use that to go in, watch film, and then see what's happening.
No, for
So,
sure. I mean,
yeah.
that's the thing. It's like it is a tool, and like you said, that would be trying to watch it all would be nearly impossible. Is there anyone over the while you've had this going on that maybe you weren't really paying attention to them, but the underlying metrics made you think, okay, I've not been viewing this player in the right light?
You know what? It was Jackson Lacombe in Anaheim. That was one guy who I was so shocked with this year because I kept seeing his name pop up in all these top of the table stats, and he was always up there. And I never really understood why, because before this season started, he was seen as lower on the depth chart than almost everyone in Anaheim. He wasn't really seen as a top end prospect. But then he scores 14 goals this year, and he was ahead of guys like Quinn Hughes and Evan Bouchard for shots within the slot. And it's If you're doing that on Anaheim, you have to be doing something right. So I, watched as much film as possible on him, try to figure out what's going on, looked at the stats, and like he's the best defenseman in California. I'll say it right now, better than anyone on LA, better than anyone on San Jose. And I kind of found that out from these stats. And I guess you're gonna see next year if you don't know how good he is yet, but he's a rock star. He's so good.
Have you started looking at all the McKenna hype for next year yet, or is that one you're waiting?
Actually, okay, so there's one other guy I was kind of looking at was Nate Miskie for the Sharks, because I was looking at his WHL stats, and he seems to me like the best defensive defenseman in the WHL, which is pretty impressive. He was an overager pick a couple years ago, bigger body, but he was number two in puck battle percentage, like winning percentage, defensive zone takeaways. But then another name who kept showing up in these defensive stats was Gavin McKenna, which was crazy because we all know how good he is offensively, setting all these records, and yet he led the league in blocked shots from the slot, I think, among forwards, which is like, okay, like pick a skill, like be good at something, not everything. Like, just come on now. So I asked Cam Robinson today actually what he thought. He's a great writer for the Elite Prospects, and I asked him what he thought McKenna's kind of ceiling is next year. And he said he didn't want to put a lid on it, but if it was 60 to 70 points, it wouldn't blow him away. But at least 50 seems like a reasonable expectation. 50 points in D1 hockey as a freshman is insane. So McKenna is that good. If San Jose gets in, the league is done. Florida's out. Like, San Jose is winning the rest of the cups. It's over.
Awesome. Well, Francis, I will let you go, man, because I know you've got stuff to do, and I know you don't want to spend all day talking with me, even though I could probably do that if I wanted to, but I won't make you suffer through that. But thank you again for this chat, man. This has been phenomenal, and I hope I can bug you again soon. All right.
Yeah, absolutely. It's been a blast. Had a great time.
This podcast can be found on demand anytime on the Sharks Plus SAP Center app. All music by Yogi Yend.